You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi, this is Dori Berenstein. Welcome to Deep Dive Broadway. I'm thrilled today to have with me the masterful Prom music team. In full disclosure, I'm a lead producer of The Prom and have been with the show from day one, so I couldn't adore or admire my guests more. I've been in the trenches with them for over 8 years and remain in deep awe of their genius. Please welcome Tony-nominated composer Matthew Sklar, music director, award-winning orchestrator, and co-executive director of A-Step, Mary Mitchell Campbell, and music director and conductor Meg Zervoulis. Let's dive in. Welcome, everyone. I am so thrilled you're here. Let's dive in and talk about how you all know each other.
Well, I met Meg Zervoulis when she was seven, and I was 17, because one of my very good friends from the community theater days is my friend Mary Brunton, and Mary happens to be Meg's cousin. Mm-hmm. So Mary was babysitting for this little kid who played the piano, and I went over because we were just hanging out, and I met Meg so I was 17 and Meg was seven. So I've known her forever, and we travel in the same circles, and I've watched her progress. And then I saw her play, I believe, at the Rising Stars Award at Paper Mill. And that was around the time we were starting to get serious about The Prom. And Mary Mitchell and I were talking about who is the right person to play, be the associate music director of that lab. And Meg's name came up, and I was like, yes, she's perfect for it because she can play in every style. And she's a great human being. And I also love the New Jersey connection as well. I love that as well. So I was thrilled when her name came up. And then Mary Mitchell, we've known each other for,
Feels like forever.
I don't even know how I know you, but I know you for a very long time. And when Casey Nicklaw was, we were trying to figure out what our music team is going to look like. We thought it was really important to have a female presence in the creative team. And I totally agreed with that.
Very important.
And look who this team is. It's an amazing, strong woman. The name of the top of the list on Broadway is Mary Mitchell Campbell. So I was thrilled when you said yes. I was thrilled when she said yes. And this team has been spectacular. And Mary Mitchell, you know, and ended up as our music supervisor. Meg ended up as our music director, conductor, and it's just been the most spectacular, you know, partnership. And I can't wait to do everything with you guys.
So I just want to go back to when you were seven, and this 17-year-old comes over, who happens to be a child prodigy musician. Was it like, oh my goodness?
Yeah. We all knew about that. And I remember leaving, or my mom picked me up, and Mary was like, she met Matt today. And then just as the years went on, I knew all about Matt's discoveries with Marvin Hamlisch and then conducting on Broadway. In fact, I wrote a letter to Matt.
Oh my God, that's right. That's
in
right.
My kind of adolescence about, yeah. Hey, oh how gosh. Do I come become a music director on Broadway? And something I really took away from that reply that Matt sent was like, just keep doing it. Just keep music directing and stick to that. And I just did that.
And so when you got that letter, did you make the connection that you met this person?
Yeah. Mary, mm-hmm. I think you said in the letter, mm-hmm. it was like, I'm Mary's cousin. Mm-hmm. And I was like, of course I remember. And I was hearing the same buzz about you, mm-hmm. through that, the family. So so I've always been following Meg's path. And the fact that we're sitting here right now is pretty great. Yeah. I mean, it's so cool.
It is so cool.
Such a cool thing.
Well, it's
my favorite thing is I knew nothing about their connection.
I know you
until
didn't,
late
actually.
In the
until
game,
later,
until
yeah.
much later in the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just I met Meg and was very excited about Meg. Mm-hmm. And brought Meg to the table without yeah. realizing.
And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do that.
Matt was like, oh, no, I know who that is. And I was like, you do? And he was like, yeah.
For quite some time.
Well, because you have history at the Paper Mill Playhouse also.
Yeah, it was my first professional job That's ever right. was at the Paper Mill Playhouse as rehearsal pianist for West Side Story, which is really hard for a 17-year-old, but I got through it. And I started working there after that show, and I was there on and off for quite a while. I kind of had all my firsts there, first rehearsal piano job, first subbing in a pit. I subbed a piano chair at West Side Story there. My first conducting job was there, conducting as assistant conductor to Fred Lassen, who is one of our subs at the prom.
Yeah.
I just saw, you know, everybody last night. Yeah, it's a tangled web.
It's a small community.
It's a small world.
Yeah, it really is. And you were the music director, arranger, and orchestrator for the Paper Mill Playhouse for 11 years?
For their summer production. Mm-hmm. And then for various other main stage mm-hmm. productions in various capacities. But similarly, I kind of grew up working at Paper Mill. And that's how we first met in real life.
Yeah. Right? I was doing a show at Paper Mill. I was supervising a show at Paper Mill, and I needed an associate music uh-huh. director. And I was looking for people that I maybe didn't know, looking outside my normal community. And so I asked around, and several people gave me Meg's name. And so I reached out and was like, hey, could you come by? I made her audition for me. Wow. Do you remember this, Meg?
Yeah.
What was I rehearsing?
Funny Neverland.
I was rehearsing Funny yeah. Neverland at 42nd Street Studios, and she came with a binder and a table of contents of songs that she could play.
Oh my God, that's
And
amazing.
She met me on my lunch break, and she played, and she was amazing. And I talked to her, and I was like, you're great. And then we ended up hiring her for that show. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that show, I guess I was like, hey, mm-hmm. do you want to come do Broadway things?
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
And now look at you, Meg.
Oh my gosh, taking over the world.
Exactly.
Yeah, seriously.
That's great.
And you all grew up so musically. Like early on, there was no chance you were going to do anything else.
Yeah.
Right?
I can't do anything else. I'm not capable.
I kind of agree.
Yeah.
I can't do
yeah.
anything else.
No
you,
choice.
No, you agree that Matt can't do anything else.
I also agree that Matt cannot do anything else.
Well, you'd be
both
correct.
Of us
you would be
not
correct.
Do anything else. I'll speak for both of us.
You can, please.
So when was the first moment that in you know, exposed to all sorts of different kinds of music growing up, but what was it in your childhoods that made you think, oh, I belong in the world of musical theater?
When I was 16 years old, I saw a production of Baby, I was studying classical piano at the time, and I had been playing in restaurants and playing by ear and all those things, but it was the first time that I'd ever seen a story like that, and I thought, oh, music can tell stories, and so, I was like, that's what I want to do. I also hated being alone in a practice room. And I thought, oh, this is fun. This involves teams of people. And there's social interaction. And you're telling a story together. That sounds great. That's what I want to do. So, like, I was about 16 when I was like, that's what I want to do.
In North Carolina. Right. So you were introduced to kind of this is for me through Maulby and Shire.
Through Maulby and Shire, who I got to tell them about that, which
that
was
nice.
That's
nice. I'm sure they love that.
I think. No, I think they were
honored.
Yeah.
What about you?
I went through the whole, you know, starting piano super young, doing the classical thing. And then when I was probably, I'm going to say 5 years old, my parents took us into the city to see Annie. And at that time it was starring Sarah Jessica Parker. I remember sitting there going, this is really interesting. I was a bit young to take it all in, but I remember saying, I think I like this. And then I remember seeing, my parents took us in quite a bit to see matinees. And then I remember seeing Singing in the Rain, I want to say at the Mark Hellinger Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my dad marching me down to the orchestra pit. and saying, look at all those people down there. Maybe you'll do that someday. I remember him saying that, and I don't remember what year that was, but it was maybe in the early 80s. And it was funny because Bob Billig was conductor of that show, who I ended up working for 10 years later.
Oh.
So I was probably 8 years old by the time I saw that show. So I was always interested in that. But once I really caught the theater bug was when my older sister started doing like summer shows. So we did we had this workshop, this Westfield summer workshop in New Jersey. And every summer they would, you'd rehearse, the kids would rehearse for 4 or 5 weeks and then do 4 performances of something. So my sister started doing those. And at that point, I immediately became enamored of these productions. And that's when I kind of, and I couldn't wait for my chance because I was too young to be in the show. So I had to wait until I was going into 6th grade because she started 3 years ahead of me. So once I was able to be in a show when I was 11, that was when I just really became obsessed with theater. And music always came naturally to me. Playing the piano always came naturally to me. But the theater, being involved in theater is where I just became kind of obsessed with it and knew I wanted it to be a part of my life. So as soon as I started being like, a little baby actor in all these school plays and all these summer shows and then doing community theater, I started obsessively listening to cast recordings. And that's what was really my window in. So, I really...
And reading liner notes.
Yeah, literally reading liner notes, like, who is that? Who's Martha Swope? Who is Jonathan Tunick? Who's, I was learning all these names of these people that came, you just saw their names over and over again. I just wanted to be a part of that. And then, but it really solidified for me when I was in 9th grade and I kind of rebelled a little bit and I was like, I don't want to take piano lessons anymore. And I quit for like 1 year and I was like, I'm going to try out for baseball. And I tried out for the baseball team in 9th grade and I did not get in. And I was like, wow, I stink at baseball. I can play the piano. Let me just dive back into that. And then a year later is when I kind of got my act together and that's when I met Marvin Hamlisch. And when I met him, I was very obsessed with music, with musicals, but I was still scared of thinking about it being a profession. But after I met him, I got very serious about it.
Well, that we have to go there, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay, to tell that story
because
that's just too delicious.
Okay. At the Union County Arts Center in Rahway, New Jersey, which I think is called something different now.
It's back.
Okay. Yeah, it's called something different. Is it? What is it now? UCPAC? Okay.
Hamilton Stage?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. It's a Union County Arts Center. We'll edit that part out. Marvin Hamlisch was doing a benefit concert for a local hospital. And I was 15. It was happening on my birthday, on my 15th birthday. And I knew all the people at the theater because I was in all of the shows and they knew me and I would play rehearsals and I was just kind of like a brat running around all the time there. And they knew I wanted to meet him. I let them know. And so the woman who ran the theater, I guess, approached Marvin after his sound check and said, there's a kid here. So I'm helping the ushers stuff program. So that was my job. That was my reason to be there. So hopefully I could meet him. And the lobby doors, burst open and there's Marvin. He comes out. He said, Where's Matt? And I raised my hand. He said, I hear you play the piano. I got a nice one on stage. Why don't you go play something for me? So I was, first of all, in shock. And then I just went on stage and I played a song that I really loved that he wrote from their playing our song. And then I played a song that I had written. And then while I was playing the song that I wrote, he sat down next to me and started improvising, four hands on top. And it was this amazing thing. And then he said, can you play the they're playing our song? Can you transpose that? Can you play that in G instead of B flat? So I knew it well enough and I was able to do that. And he said, how old are you? And I said, 15. And then the lady from the theater said, and it's his birthday today. and he said, do you want to be in the show tonight? You have to be in the show tonight. So basically I accompanied him while he sang the song in G, not B flat. And I had a cue, after he finished playing Ice Castles, I was to go backstage and then he introduced me, did the song. It went great. He was hilarious, as he always was. And we stayed in touch after that. And he gave me you know, he wrote me a college recommendation letter. He really talked to my parents at length about where I should go if I want to write for musical theater, which was NYU, because he's like, you need to know directors and writers and all different people and not just go to a conservatory where you're just going to do music and learn, you know, do concert music. I feel like I've been talking forever. Is that okay?
Oh,
is
it's okay? Fascinating. I'm
okay.
Good.
Okay. And it was a great, it was just a great relationship because he gave me the pat on the back to say, no, you actually have a good feel for this in a real way. And then when I was in NYU, one day I was, you know, at home and in my little apartment with my roommate and the phone rang. He had called my parents to say, to see where I was. And he got my number and said, I'm rehearsing a show at 890 Broadway. Why don't you come hang out with me for the day? So I got to watch him work with Billy Byers and Tori Zito, these amazing orchestrators, you know, when he was working on The Goodbye Girl. So I was me, basically there was, I spent about a half hour in a room with Marvin Hamlisch, Billy Byers, Tori Zito, Martin Short, Bernadette Peters, Gene Sachs, and Graziella Danielle. I mean, and David Zippel. It was amazing just to be a kid watching all these great people work. And so that kind of got me started. And then at the same time, I kind of lucked into being a sub keyboard player on Broadway. Oh. But it all, it really was Marvin kind of saying, hey, you have a good feel for this. Don't be afraid, go for it. And that was really meaningful.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So full circle, because when you think about little Matt and just wanting to be like his big sister, it's such a chorus line situation.
No,
and
yeah.
Here it is, Marvin in your future.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. Meg?
That is such a great story. I'm just reveling.
I love that story so much.
I also, like my compadres, started in classical brain. Pretty serious competition kind of kid. But at the same time, I was acting a lot in similar community productions. You know, I was like Gretel, Sound of Music at age 5. So I always, always loved theater. But as far as music directing goes, I remember coming to see Lion King with my mom when that must have been like late grammar school. And I remember there was a woman conducting, which I think through research, I think might be Sherry Rosen, who is something I've later worked with as a student. And I vividly remember the amazing inspiration of that day. And then we talked about it. And then she started taking me to see other shows. And I'd always go up and look at the musicians. And then I started working at Paper Mill during high school in the summers. And then ever since then, I've just been music directing and doing all that.
So. Meant to be for all of you. Who was, for you, your mentor? Who were the people that influenced you the most?
You have a good one.
Yeah, I have a good one too. I had Cy Coleman.
Oh,
Oh, so
and
cool.
I mean, I guess sort of similar to the insanity of your story with Marvin. Like, he really adopted me. I met him doing a Broadway Cares benefit. But when I moved to New York doing Sweet Charity as a benefit. And it was really crazy because I found myself in a room with Gwen Verdon and and Cheetah. And, you know, like, it was very insane. And Cy, who came up to me and said, Cheetah wants to sing the song in F. Can you play it in F? And
I was like, learn how to transpose, kids.
Learn how to transpose. And I was like, sure. okay. So, but after it was over, he asked if I wanted to get involved with a camp he was working with Paul Newman called the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp. And I ended up going to like volunteer, and he was like, I don't know what you're going to do. You might not do anything. You might play rehearsal. I don't know what you're going to do. But do you want to come? And I was like, yeah, I think so. I think I'd like to go. And so we ended up there, and I ended up having to sight read in concert for Isaac Stern. So that was my.
No pressure.
Yeah. How'd that go?
Surprisingly okay, but very stressful.
Oh my God.
Very, very stressful.
How old were you then?
22.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yep. It was memorable.
Thrown into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it goes.
Yep.
Best way to do it.
Yep.
Best way to do it. Yeah. And for a while there, anything that happened, I was like, well, it's not as stressful as sight reading for Isaac Stern.
Yeah. If you did that, you can do anything.
Yeah. I was like, it's seriously, not as bad as that. So like, it'll be fine. It was all relative.
So prom was a total piece of cake.
No Broadway show is a piece of cake. No.
Could each of you talk about, Matt, obviously you're the composer of the show, but could you two talk about when you got involved and your roles in the show? And then I'm really eager to hear about your collaboration, because as I said in the beginning, it's extraordinary and how you all work together. And you know, I'm very eager to hear about maybe some examples of you know, being in the trenches, mm-hmm, and working through some stuff. So, Meg.
Yeah, I first got involved with the lab, which occurred right before we left for Atlanta to do the out-of-town tryout. And that was by invitation with MMC, and I was over the moon. And I didn't know any of these people at the time, other than you, mm-hmm, distantly. But, you know, I hadn't worked for Casey. I hadn't played for any of the other writers. I had no connection at all. So I remember the first day of that, and she was like, that's Glenn Kelly over there. I'm like, I know who that is. That's so exciting. But of course, I was trying to play it cool.
I came on board, and I guess maybe one of the first readings? Was that,
yeah,
the first reading?
Yeah, I think the first 29-hour reading.
Exactly.
First 29-hour reading.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which was 2014, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah, I actually had to write it down when you came on board. Because yeah. Usually I'm able to, all the table readings we had done up to that point,
you just play yourself.
I just play it myself. And, you know, and then once the 29-hour reading starts, that's when I kind of have to take a deep breath, go, okay, I have to now upload all this information from my brain onto paper so I don't have to play it all the time. And it's liberating, but it's also exhausting. Yeah. I find that to be one of the most exhausting parts of the process. But I like to do it myself. Some people like to, you know, play it and have somebody write it down for them. I like to do it because I like to, you're forced to make some choices. Mm-hmm. And I find that also some counterpoint lines come to me while I'm transcribing the songs for the first time. So I like to hold on to those ideas and make sure they're deliberate choices. Mm-hmm. So that happens right before the first 29-hour reading. But then it feels so great to get up. It feels so great to not have to play.
I remember the moment you told me Mary Mitchell was joining the team.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like we did.
Oh, you're so psyched.
Such a happy dance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was just absolutely, like a joyous, joyous, incredible moment.
Yeah.
Just for every reason, because how extraordinary you are and just your leadership and everything that you were going to bring to the table. It was, yeah, just like, yes, home run.
You guys were so kind. But I remember that first 29-hour reading, and I was like, this is a great show.
Yeah, we got off to a great start. You know, it was one of those things where when that 29-hour reading happened and the cast learned the songs and we heard it from, out of their voices, it was like, we're on to something. We're not there yet, but we're on to something. And that was really special. And it went through so many changes. I mean,
I was about to say, I'm just remembering that opening number.
Oh, yeah,
that
our reading. Our somewhat legendary opening number that got us off on the wrong start, but it was hilarious.
It was really funny.
Different musical, but
yeah, exactly,
great
exactly.
Opening number,
exactly. But that's why that's what readings and workshops are for.
That's right.
That's where you learn. But you know, having these two lead the department has been so great. And I will say, you know, a lot of my rehearsal time was really just being able to focus on what I'm supposed to focus on. And it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes you kind of have to meddle in the organization aspect of things. And with Mary Mitchell and Meg, like, they got it. And it was the best for me because I knew everything was taken care of. And it doesn't always work that way. It really doesn't. And they've been dream collaborators. And I always felt every step of the way that they were taking care of the score, they were protecting the score. If there were issues, there would be a list of things that we go through. Meg is the queen of lists. She's the queen of the checklist. Yeah, really good with lists.
She's the queen of lists, for sure, without question.
Yeah, and you know, that's you know, a part of being a music director that they don't teach you. You know, I'm not meant to be a music director. I did it for a while. I thought I wanted to be one, but when it came to the management part of things and the maintenance part of things and the organizational part of things, I'm like, oh, this is not for me.
Because it's not just taking care of the score. It's also every appearance. It's like running
a business. Yeah, you're running
a business.
And
it's, you know,
and hiring people and making sure you have the right synth rig and making sure you have enough space and making sure that the sound guys have what they need and everybody can hear. It's all of that stuff that these two are geniuses at. And then being brilliant musicians is just on top of that. So it's really, you know, very special. You guys are very special.
Well, I was about to say, turning this back around on Matt, it is very rare to have a composer with the kind of skill set that he has. And who actually does understand and can appreciate anything that we did do, which he's giving us maybe a tad bit more credit than he. Like, he did a lot. You did a lot. So, but you know, to have someone who really understands the ins and outs of everything,
yeah,
and who has the skill set to be able to do all the things he can do, because it's rare to have a composer that can notate everything brilliantly and play the piano brilliantly and could orchestrate it brilliantly and can arrange everything and can turn things around very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. All of those skills are not usually combined into amazingly sane and funny human.
I try. I mean, I think being a pit musician and going through those ranks for, you know, 12 years that I did, you just kind of learn how a musical is constructed. And I think that informs my writing. And also, I want them to be taken care of. I don't want to throw something that's impossible to conduct on a music director. I don't want to throw something a vamp that's impossible to get out of,
yeah,
on a conductor. I want to make sure that it's comfortable to conduct 8 shows a week with half of your orchestra being subs. You know, it's important. Those things are important. And I try to think about that from the get-go instead of thinking about it later.
But that kind of knowledge is rare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say.
Oh, yeah.
To build a show with that kind of knowledge.
Yeah.
So we are the lucky ones that we get to record with someone.
Thank you for listening to part one of Deep Dive Broadway, where we went behind the curtain with the prom music team. Lots more coming up in part two. Please join us.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.